League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
No, I want to listen to 3 hours conversation or something.
It's the longest podcast you've ever listened to. 3 hours, do you reckon, of one person talking?
Yeah, I think probably about 3 hours.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I don't know how long I've done. I've definitely sat and listened to podcasts like all day.
Yeah.
And felt like I've otherwise felt mentally drained, yeah. Or I felt like I've learned a lot. It's one or the other. The other one that's, I do a lot of audio books as well. And I listened to, whose book was it? What's the guy's name? Fuck. Oh my God. It's going to bug me. He's like a hardcore, like ex-military guy.
Like David Goggins or something, or?
That's it, David Goggins. I listened to his audiobook.
He's everywhere, that guy.
Oh my God, he's insane. Yeah. And like, have you listened to the book?
I haven't. I just see like him popping up everywhere. I think he's like just amazing at self-promotion. And he's like the king of motivation at the moment. So, and I think anybody who like jumps on the back of the Joe Rogan bandwagon is going to do pretty well in that space.
Yeah, definitely. By the way, I've started recording. I'll tell you that now.
Cool.
I normally don't. I normally just press it and see what goes on. But I thought we were already starting quite an interesting chat, so I thought I might as well record it.
For sure.
His book, his audio book, why I really like it is because the guy that's the narrator is really good anyway in it. But what they do after every chapter, it's like an interview about the chapters with him.
Right.
So, and they're talking through how they've recorded it. And so what they're doing is the guy that's reading the audiobook reads it, and then he's reading it while David's there. So they at points he interjects and engages in conversation about certain topics in the books. It's like a podcast.
Yeah, wow. So it's like a really personal introspection again. Like it's you're getting double the amount of information.
Yeah, and then the more direct like questions at the end, you're just like, holy fuck, this guy has gone through so much madness.
Yeah.
Like I don't think you quite realize what has happened to him in his life until you like. I mean, I was like, God, it's got to be bullshit. Some of it's got to be over the top and a bit of a lie.
Yeah.
But like the guy in the who's reading the book is also like, I shit you not, I've gone and asked these people if this is true. And they're like, yeah, that's legit what happened.
Yeah, wow.
And so you can see why he's like a bit of a madman, and also why he's kind of grown so much from, as you say, the Joe Rogan podcast was the one that really like set him off, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Well, at least one I saw. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how those guys can sort of build these crazy careers out of that kind of stuff.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Fantastic. I love it. I'm all about it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like doing podcasts was just like, as I said, I listen to them a lot, and I've been lucky through the many different like careers I've gone through in my life already to have met really interesting people. Mm-hmm. And also I with you, for example, I found out about you at first through Dov.
Yeah.
Cause I remember saying to Dov, cause when the new style branding of the parkour's wheels, the first ones that came out, when I first saw it, I was like, I remember messaging Dov and I was like, fuck, that looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, do you like it? And I'm like, yeah, man, it looks really cool. And he was like, oh, this is the guy that did it. Check it out. And that's how I first came across you. And my background's architecture. So I like have an interest in anything like design orientated anyway.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask, because I saw that you just sort of, you've dipped your toes into design full time now. You're starting a studio.
I'm doing it sort of for fun on the side.
Sure.
I'm still working another job to pay the bills, basically. So I work. My main job is I work for basically for it's the company. The holding company is called Freeride.
Right.
But the main part of it that's sort of publicly known is Cycling Pulse, mm-hmm. which is basically the big Instagram account. But the
it's like content generation, a lot of it, isn't it?
Yeah, and so how that's kind of set up, and was it was started by one guy and his cousin or brother-in-law is the guy that founded Lab Bible.
Okay.
So, like, I think he obviously saw there was something in it in cycling.
For sure.
He's originally a lawyer, but he's a very keen cyclist. And so I before that, I was working at Jam, and then, you know, Jam kind of ended. Mm. And Ollie pitched this idea about me coming on board and helping him with Cycling Pulse, which what used to be called Cycling Porn. They had to change the name because of Facebook, basically.
Right.
And so anyway, I sort of work with a couple of the clients that I sort of look after a couple of the clients, which is, as you say, content creation, social media management, that sort of thing. And then we have, there's four of us, actually, which is pretty nuts.
Okay. But
yeah, it's really nice. Like, it's a really nice little team. And then the design stuff with Zero Lemon, to be honest, it all just started out as just having a bit of fun and just like keeping doing creative things. Because I really lost the love of design. Huh. I was working at, well, I don't know whether I want to badmouth the companies. I kind of, fuck it.
It's it sounds pretty similar to my story, actually, in terms of what I did with Kern Cycling. It was like kind of like an avenue to create design that you had like full control of and create something like beautiful that wasn't inhibited by like, you know, maybe some questionable client design decisions.
Yeah. The Kern stuff, all of the stuff that came out of that is fucking stunning.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm sort of, it's a funny one because I'm not really doing anything with it now, but it really was sort of the start of my career in the cycling industry in terms of design. It was exactly like I said, it was started out of the idea of like, okay, I have some great connections and I have some good experience. Why don't I try and create some things for myself that I think are truly beautiful and I think will affect the industry. From there it just sort of snowballed. It went from being, you know, like small runs of kits to being which is pretty similar to what you're doing at the moment, but then into you know, servicing the cycling industry, working for a few bigger clients, and I think that all snowballed to a full-time career in the cycling industry, which I guess is the dream for many of us.
So now you're I should say who you are. You're Gregory Thorne.
Yes.
Who is I haven't even done that yet. So the background that I know is you're Australian. You're now based out in the States. You, as you say, Kern was like your real like design project baby, which is something I've seen for a long time and just like loved everything. You did the designs for the Flanders bikes, which are beautiful. Nice condom packets, I remember at some point.
Yeah.
They said something like rubber side down on them, did they?
Yeah. That was ridiculous. I think I found like a template online of somebody was doing something and they were creating these amazing Photoshop templates. And I think at the time I was a little bit content starved and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to throw something to do with like FMB, who was a sponsor of my team at the time. And something to do with Kern and Flanders. And I just threw it on a condom and got a bit of traction. That was a funny one.
It's so good though. Like things like that are the things that people love. Like,
yeah. If you can create some sort of like higher consideration, which is hilarious because we're talking about a condom packet, but you can create a connection that is, you know, a little deeper bit of thinking and some free thought. And it's quite fun. I think you're onto a winner, but
Yeah,
you basically got it about right. Do you want me to jump in and sort of give the whole story?
Yeah, go for it.
So I, yeah, I am Australian. I'm originally South African, but I guess I was born in South Africa, moved to Australia. Didn't really start with a career in design. I after school, I was always into design. Both my parents are architects. So it was sort of something that was always there for me. But I originally started out trying to pursue a sort of a career in rugby. I don't think I was as good as I thought I was, but I wanted to see if it was possible and give it a go. Suffered a few injuries, and then design was sort of my fallback. So I started studying graphic design. But I mean, the whole time being a sports-based person, I needed something to tame the madness. So I found cycling and absolutely fell in love with it. And I think the big thing that attracted me to it was, you know, the budding creativity and, you know, fashion and the design that was parallel to the whole industry.
Yeah.
And I guess from there, I started working as a freelance designer, just fairly traditional stuff. I was freelance pretty much my whole design career. So I really got to I never really jumped into the big studios. I did work freelance for a couple of them, but I think the cycling and the design industry for me was like running quite nicely. I started working for a couple of bigger clients. Cycling Tips was one of them. That was really great. Gave me a lot of connections in the industry. And I think at the time, I was sort of trying to work out whether I wanted to follow that traditional design design studio pathway, or if I did want to work in the cycling industry. Mm-hmm. After a few big projects, the door opened at Trek. So that's where I'm at now. I've moved over to Wisconsin in the US, which has been a pretty big move, but one I've been loving. Working here as a product graphic designer.
That's so cool. And your Madone is fucking stunning.
Thanks, mate.
I'm not even going to beat around the bush. Like, it is a proper. I remember when, I don't know when you first posted it, but I remember when you first posted it and I was like, holy fuck. And this is coming from someone that doesn't like green. I don't like green. And I saw that and I was like, that's good green. Right. It's back. It's working.
Beautiful.
Fucking
irony.
So that was the irony of, as we were just saying before it restarted, was technology is shit sometimes. And my computer internet just absolutely died. Thanks, Virgin Media. Well, maybe, they're really, really good.
Maybe we are being too harsh on it. We are on like completely different sides of the world. We're sending a communication up into space and then back down here. Maybe we're being a bit too savage to it.
Maybe, but I've also done podcasts with someone that lives 5 minutes away from me and had the same problem.
Yeah, fair enough. Stuff it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, Dov's not that far away.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's just... Yeah, because you're based in London, aren't you?
So I'm East London. Dov is South West, I think.
So I'm surprised. I'm surprised we never crossed paths, because I was there for a while. I was actually living in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, but spending a lot of time in the UK. Am I the first person you've interviewed who you don't actually officially know?
No.
So I'm not
the second person.
All right, I'm not.
You're the second. You're the first male.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and you're also episode 13, which I said to you in the messages was like, for me, that was quite funny because obviously in cycling, 13 is upside down.
Lucky for some.
You're from, Australia.
Perfect.
You know, that's kind of upside down.
I was gutted to hear that you had Scotty from Cervelo on. I was excited about being the first Australian. Shattered.
He was hilarious as well. Actually, he was good banter from him. I was proper buzzing for that one. And ironically, I just dropped. There's a lot of weird ironies that happened today. Now you mentioned that as well. So I've just ridden to my bike fitter, which is a guy called Tim. I've just ridden to his studio because he's had my Aspero delivered, which I'm putting some Parkour's outer wheels on.
Nice.
So literally as I was just 5 minutes before, half an hour before I got jumped on this, I just you know, ridden back from Tim's with two, with like the wheels on the back of my rucksack, and then basically weird tie-ups between Cervelo, talking about that Aspero, the cosmic vomit bike,
yeah,
and then Parkour's wheels. It's just weird. It's all weird how it ties up. But yeah, I mean, officially, the only other person I've interviewed was Reese, who I've never met either, who's one of the Cervelo riders, and I just thought she'd be really interesting to talk to. And we've like chatted a few times on Instagram and stuff like that, and she's fucking rad actually. But
yeah,
it's Wisconsin cold.
It's really nice. The you've got like a really good flow with the guests that you've had so far. It's been it seems like it's not planned, but it's been sort of like people and personalities within the cycling industry with like a design and product facing sort of background. So it's been pretty,
yeah.
Like everybody's been pretty knowledgeable and interesting. It's I've been a fan before a guest, so that's kind of cool.
That's very, very kind of you to say, but that's quite intentional, because for me, I wanted to talk to people that interest me.
Yeah,
it's very simple. It's like people that I find interesting that do things that are interesting, and doesn't really matter. Like I'm going to do one with my old tutor at some point when I studied architecture, because he's like pretty hardcore. He was like the one of the first black architects in the UK.
Okay.
He's quite old now, which if he's listening, and I know he does listen, he'll be like, you dickhead.
Stoked about the shout out.
But he'll be like, thanks for like dropping me in, but you prick for calling me old. But he was one of the like first like quite well known sort of black architects, and he, you know, I think he's coming up for 60, and at a time, in fact, no, he might even be over 60 now, but at a time when he was studying, like that was a seriously tricky situation to be in, and like he said, there's a lot of like racial prejudice that came against him for being black and wanting to be an architect. Mm. And
no, for sure, I can definitely understand that. My dad, obviously being South African, studying in South Africa, had always regaled us with stories about his colleagues and the struggles that they had with, you know, post-apartheid and during apartheid, having friends who are architects being black as well.
Yeah, it's like I mean, in modern society, most people don't even care or think about it. But like, I've talked to him quite a lot about it, and he does a lot for like equal rights sort of charities in the UK. And also, he was awarded the keys to the City of London.
Wow.
Which comes with some really like funny little rules and stuff that you can do.
Huh.
And like, I was just like, tell me the rules. I want to know these great rules. And one of them, yeah, it is proper, like a bit strange, but like one of them is he can legally shepherd a flock of sheep across any bridge in the city.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Super useful.
I was like, you need to get some sheep just to be able to do that, because you can.
Yeah.
And another one was if he's to get hung, like hung on a noose, it has to be a silk rope.
Wow.
It's like, they're the ones I was just like, wow, okay, that's pretty cool. But
this is how you know that your kingdom's really old, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. He must have some amazing perspective though. He'd be probably an incredible teacher to have.
Yeah, it was fast. It was brilliant. Like I learned a hell of a lot from him, and not just like design knowledge, but just life knowledge. Like it really opened my eyes. And one of the things when I was studying that I still get on very well. He's a bit of a mentor to me now. And one of the things when I was studying, we were chatting about it. He was like, he has this real thing about getting people from as many diverse backgrounds as possible into be able to study architecture, but also because he thinks it's really good for everyone. Sure. In like, especially when you're like, you know, you go into university at what, 18, something like that, you're still very susceptible, but you feel like you know what you're doing and where your head's at, but in reality you haven't got a fucking clue.
For sure. Mind's a sponge.
Yeah, exactly. And he So like in my class, for example, we had one guy that was from like the Albanian mafia. Like, it's like, but fuck, I learned a shit ton from him. Sure. Like just life knowledge. Yeah. And there's like loads of things like that that are really fascinating. Well,
when you're talking about architecture and design, I mean, it pays to have, you know, the more breadth of knowledge that you have to apply to that situation. I mean, architecture for one affects everybody. It's about our spaces and urban design, for example. Like everybody's interacting with spaces and everybody comes at it from a different point of view. So you'd be a fool to try and, you know, come up with a solution to a problem that is only, you know, implied by your one process of thought. You need as much information exactly. as possible, right?
Yeah, diversifying everything in as many way as you can, sure. and just being a sponge and accepting that you are a sponge is so important.
Have you found the move from architecture to design?
Much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
So I used to work for a very, very large American architecture firm who, when I worked there, I almost want to taint the name, but I'm not that much of a bastard. But I'll tell you privately, sure. when I worked there, they were like, I think on the amount of people they employed, they were probably the biggest firm in the world.
Wow. Okay. Narrows it down.
Yeah. And I don't know if they are now, but when I graduated, it was very, very hard to get a job there. It was very competitive. And I got lucky, basically. I won. They did like a student award, and I won the student award. And with that, I got a placement there. And then I just worked my bollocks off and managed to get a job. But I went up the rank quite quickly, which was kind of surprising on everyone's perspective, I think, because a lot of the more senior guys there didn't like the fact that I was like a bit of a scruffy kid, beard, shaggy hair, tattoos. They didn't like that.
Yeah.
Because they're quite corporate. I was
modern day architect now.
Exactly. Like, that was quite standard now. And it's just the old school guys that didn't really like that. And I started off doing like law firms, which was pretty boring because every law firm is exactly the same thing. I want an office. That's all it is. They just give me an office. They don't want to have any, there's no interaction of like doing anything exciting with them. And then I got involved with like doing some stuff with Google and some stuff with Facebook, which was way more interesting. And like a couple of like tech startup projects. And then I got involved with doing the design, fuck it, it's a give it away, one of the designs for an airport in the UK, which wasn't, because there's been this conversation for a long time in London specifically. Fuck it, I'm just going to go with this because I don't talk to anyone there anymore.
It's your rules, it's your podcast, who cares?
Yeah, I don't talk to anyone there, and I don't think any of them will even fucking listen to this, but so I got involved on doing an airport design, which is for an airport in the Thames Estuary, which was a project that Boris Johnson at the time was like mayor of London, and he like commissioned it as a project. Yeah. It's never happened, but that was like, it was pretty nuts. It's fucking full on. And so I left there. I got one of my directors there basically set up the London office for an Australian architecture firm called Fender Katsadelas. Mm-hmm. And we pitched like on loads of big, big skyscraper projects internationally with no office, no real like company sort of structure. We just basically had the backing of knowing that we had the Australian side of the company behind us.
Yeah.
And we somehow managed to get like four skyscraper projects.
Unreal.
We borrowed another company's office to make it look like we had a company. which is hilarious.
That immediately reminds me of that design meme where it's like the stock photo guy that they always use. We'd love to meet you and your clients, and it's just a picture of him holding a coffee at home, like meet you and all your staff, and it's just him.
Yeah, and it's just what it's like, though.
Totally.
We started off with I have a lot of like good memories of that place. We started off with four of us, and then because of winning four skyscrapers, like two were in Canada, but then there was two towers in Canada, two interior projects in Canada, which was doing the interiors of skyscrapers. And then there was another one in London, which was a skyscraper. Why are you talking to me, Siri? This is a regular thing.
Was it with Dove? I think, yes. Yeah. Same thing.
And then we had another skyscraper in London. So I ended up I got massive burnout because I was basically in London working for an Australian company doing projects in Canada.
Yeah, and a lot of pressure projects too.
High pressure, really high pressure. I'm still like early 20s at this point. Like, it was full on. And then trying to juggle all of that with life. And then I just got to a point where I was like, I physically can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I moved into retail design, and I really enjoyed retail design. But then I got put on retail design. It kind of incorporated a mix of graphic branding, store design. It's like, it's quite fun, but it's really quick turnaround. But then I worked on like a couple of Supreme stores. They were good fun. And like Rafa, I worked on Rafa and a lot of stuff for Adidas and Nike, which was kind of unheard of to be doing with both clients. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, really, really cool. Really enjoyed that sort of period. But then I ended up on a load of projects that were very, very shit. Like just boring, like homeware stores.
Leatherheads.
Yeah, just fucking crap. Just absolute crap. And it was around the time of Brexit, the original vote. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of chucked it all in properly.
Fair enough.
But for me, like now, like it's just like having a bit of freedom to do what I want, kind of do projects that I want to. Like I've only really got two projects on at the moment, but they're like the fun ones. Like one of them is doing something that's like all focused around like their kit designs, but they're like fun. They're fun projects. Like I enjoy that. And then like the Movistar did that little like competition thing, and I was just like, oh, fuck it, I'll just have a go, see what happens.
For sure. I don't think enough can be said, and I find this with a lot of people and personalities who are working within the cycling industry. I don't think enough can be said for actually following your gut feeling and like your love and your passion with your career. Like so many people are so focused on what is going to be the safe move for my career? What am I going to be able to, you know, earn the most dollars to retire on, or to use a cliche, but like, you know, how am I going to be the most safe and secure? And there's not enough to be said for people who decide to follow their passions and to combine their like outside of work passions with their work, which is really why I love people in the cycling industry.
You can tell people they're really passionate about
For sure, for sure.
So how, like, I mean, the Trek, when that came up, that must have been like, you must be thinking, holy shit.
Yeah, it was a really interesting one. It happened at a perfect time. I was living in Melbourne. I was primarily working for a friend's design studio. It's called South Southwest. And it was pretty ridiculously cool. Like their main clients were Nike and Jordan, and they had Google as well as a client. So the stuff that I was working on there as a freelancer was really amazing, and I got a taste for how cool a job traditional graphic design could be. But then I'd been a freelancer for 10 years, and I was really struggling with the admin side of work, and really, you know, 80% of my job was keeping up with books and clients and communication and that kind of thing, and not being as creative as I wanted to be.
And that seems to be the case as you get more senior, I found anyway, that you do less active design.
Totally, totally. And then like while I was working for him, I had like my cycling clients on the side, and I really felt like I had to make a decision between the two. And then actually, funnily enough, with the modern era, a conversation started on Instagram, just in the DMs with one of the product graphic designers, one of the senior product graphic designers at Trek, Micah. And he was sort of talking about how he had a job opening, and I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And he said, do you want to apply for it? And I was like, okay, well, I'll send a portfolio over. And a couple of weeks later, Trek flew me over to Wisconsin and met the whole crew, and basically had a speed dating type scenario where I met, like, I think I had about 18 people I met in the space of about 4 or 5 hours, and then jumped back on a plane, flew back to Australia. A couple of conversations later, and I was on the books. So it was pretty crazy and pretty whirlwind, but it felt like the door was open and I had to walk through it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
So here I am now in Madison, Wisconsin, other side of the world.
Fuck. Well, that, I mean, like, it's such an opportunity. It almost feels like you would have been kicking yourself if you'd turned it down.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, I've got no problem moving around the world. I think I've been doing it most of my life. I've lived in a bunch of different cities and away from my family. The tricky one was I was at a point where I had really fallen in love with Melbourne again, where I was living.
Yeah.
I was feeling really secure, great friendship group, really close relationship with my friends and my family. But I mean, like, if I said no to this, it would have been ridiculous.
Do you miss Melbourne a lot?
I do. It's been a funny one. Like, just before everything happened with isolation and COVID-19 lockdown, I was literally about to fly back to Australia for a trip to see everybody. It would have been 7 months since I've been back. And then this happened, and I was just like, oh, come on. That was like my chance to reconnect with everybody. I'd sort of been away from them for Christmas, New Year's, me turning 30, my sister falling pregnant. So it was like I was so ready to go back and reconnect. But all this happened, and I sort of just looked at it as like, well, you're not exactly in the worst scenario. You've got a great job that you love. You've got a great house. You know, we're lucky that we can still go out and do solo rides and that sort of thing. So it was tricky, and I was missing everybody. But I mean, you got to look at those sort of things like a test and try and build some, you know, some character out of it, I guess.
Yeah. It has been like this whole COVID-19 situation has been such a topic that has gone throughout every podcast. Yes. And I know why, like, because it's, you know, it's affecting how it's affecting everyone. So everyone. Much. It's obvious it's going to be, but like, we have not had something like this in our livelihood, like in our lives. Like, I can't think of it. I'm 30. I can't think of it.
At least our generation. No, I mean, like, the closest thing would be the AIDS crisis, but that's not part of our generation.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there's not really been any, I mean, there's been plenty of wars, but there's not been wars that have directly affected us, unless you're in the military in some sense.
For sure. It's beautiful to see how quickly, you know, industry, people, and have been able to adapt and thrive through it. Well, not thrive, but, you know, just change to keep surviving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's going to be an interesting world that we come out on the other side.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel that I like to think that it's I mean, like, I'm talking to people more now probably than I did before, because I'm actually making conscious efforts to talk to people.
Yeah, for sure.
Which isn't a bad thing at all. But I do feel like there's the potential that there's so much good that can come out of a shit situation. Like, there always is. There's always good that comes from bad. And that's law of opposites, you know. Whenever there's something shit, there's got to be something good that comes back out of it. Mm-hmm. And like, you look at the shit that's happened, the amount of people that have passed away, like, that is shit. On the flip side, I have this like this attitude that it feels as though like the world has intentionally kind of done this.
Yeah, I think you'd have to be blind to not think that as well. I mean, like, we've through times of like real prosperity where we've become, you know, so fat and so greedy with the way that we consume things and create things. It just feels like it would be natural for there to be a, you know, a tilt and a shift. As harsh as it is, I definitely feel that way as well.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, and then you, it's like things when I've been seeing, I follow like this Instagram account, which is called, I think what it's called, but it's like, it's all about like, I think it's called the Happy Account or something like that. The Happy Broadcast. Like, I mean, lot, I'm probably
it's going to be a lot of motivational pictures on sunsets.
Well, what they do, it's just like quotes and stuff like that. Yeah. But they do on Sundays, they do coronavirus edition posts.
Okay.
And it like, and it just, it's all about like talking about things being realistic. But like it said, the last one on Sunday was showing, there's a photograph which shows air pollution in, I don't know what city it is, but it shows the air pollution before the lockdown and now.
Yeah.
And the contrast differences. And like, it's things like that where I'm just like, do you know what? That's the world kind of turning around and going, yeah,
hey, we need this. To take a
break. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And the one that got me as well was the, this was another one that I saw, is Indians can see the Himalayas from 100 miles away for the first time in decades.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I saw one similar, which was astronauts could see like cities in China for the first time. I mean, don't fact check me on any of the stuff. I'm just a lowly graphic designer. I probably shouldn't even be talking about this stuff anyway. But I do think, you know, the dolphins returning to waterways and the health of you know, natural environments has been pretty obvious. And honestly, something I think we should focus on a little bit more. I mean, I think it's a very weird position to take when people are suffering and dying. But for, you know, for the average Joe to hear something like that, it can be really uplifting.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't really appreciate the people who what like tend to sit on mainstream news. Yeah, this is why in the UK, I don't know what it was. I don't know how the situation was in the States. Panic buying in the UK was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you can now get toilet roll. Thank God I can shit in peace. You still can't get flour anywhere because there's been like a massive uptake of people baking.
Yeah, I did notice that because I also jumped into the banana bread recently and I found it very difficult to find flour.
Yeah. I bake a lot anyway. I really enjoy baking, yeah. And I've always enjoyed it. I went on a bread making course like after the Atlas Mountain race.
Yeah.
Came back and went on a bread making course, and it was really fascinating actually. But the people out buying stuff, and like I know, like prime example, my mum, 100%, she was one of those people who went panic shopping and spent 500 quid in the supermarket, yeah. And I was like, I was talking to her about it. I was like, well, what did you buy? And she's like, well, I've got loads of frozen stuff, yeah. Loads of canned stuff. I was like, you live on your own. Like, what the fuck?
It's very funny. People are buying all sorts of foods and things that they would never buy anyway.
Exactly.
Like, a lot of non-perishables. Yeah. Very funny. Yeah, no, it's when the fear gripped everybody, the madness ensued.
Yeah, I mean, it was similar in the States, yeah?
No, I mean, like, I saw it originally happening in Australia with the big toilet paper thing, but I think that could be just because my social media eye is directed towards that way. But, no, it definitely happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely happened here. I think, you know, the Aussies, the Americans, and the Brits are the most to blame for this madness, yeah. As we usually are.
Yeah, it's normally us, isn't it?
We're pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. You haven't tried to drink any disinfectant though, have you?
No, I learned my lesson when the Tide Pod thing happened. You know, I was got really into Tide Pods for a while. No, not at all. Yeah, I can't even watch that stuff. When that happens, like we're living in a comedy. When you know when the president of the US is saying that sort of thing, you've just got to be like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, I reckon he could be like a character in the Tiger King.
Oh, for sure. He's bred out of America's love for television and cinema and drama. He's a reality TV host.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly it. I mean,
it's amazing.
It's great, very good.
It's kind of weird to be a part of, but it's great to watch.
He had a great PR company behind him to get him in that White House. Definitely, we'll say that
for sure, right?
Yeah. What? So, what's like next in line for you then? So, you're now out in the States. Obviously, everything's a bit. I'm presuming you're still working, but like,
yeah, we've been in a really great position because we're sort of full steam ahead. One of the great things to come out of this has been people are buying more bikes than ever, and maybe not necessarily road bikes and mountain bikes, but a lot of city and a lot of town bikes. So we're chugging on just like normal. I mean, Trek's been amazing in terms of how they reacted to this. We've been working from home for about 7 weeks, which I think is pretty similar to most people.
That's really good. That's the same. I've been working at home for, I think I'm on week 9 now.
Yep.
But in the States, which were probably a bit further behind than the UK.
Yeah.
That's really.
And for, a company with, thousands and thousands of employees and offices all around the world, they reacted really fast and really quickly. I was pretty impressed by it. But we're really lucky in that I think we have a really diverse manufacturing where we manufacture all of our bikes. So when everything happened and it hit China big time, we were lucky that we were still up and running. I think there are a lot of smaller brands that really suffered at that point in time. But we were lucky to keep going. And I think Trek's response to in terms of like supporting all their dealers has been really cool. Because, when it comes down to it, that's the biggest bottom line. And I think a lot of companies aren't as, entrenched with their dealers as Trek are. So they were really good in supporting them and teaching them how to adapt and how to stay afloat while this happened. In terms of design, we're business as usual. I mean, we designed for, at the moment, we're working on model year 22. So we're designing pretty far ahead in the future. So
is that pretty standard though? Like, because I'm imagining like 21 is like in production now.
Yeah, that is pretty standard. Can't talk a lot about that kind of stuff that we're working on, but we look pretty far forward into the future, which I guess is why like trend forecasting is such a big part of our job. For me as a job, it's like I'm bikes color and graphics as a product graphic designer, but I mean development of new colors and new paint schemes is a really big part of our job. Also, like looking at
Trek's always been very well known for the whole Project One side of it, hasn't it? Like that,
and with Icon as well, developing like really interesting color schemes, which honestly is probably my favorite part of the job. It's amazing to work on that stuff. It's like, what can we do? How far can we achieve with paint and graphics? And let's see if we can do it. Let's see if we can make it. We're so lucky in that we have a whole like group of master painters that work for us here. When I was working previously, designing bikes for people like Flanders and Curve and a few other companies, it was like you come up with an idea on a flat artwork, you send it off to the factory and you cross your fingers. Like you hope it's going to come back okay. But now it's like, within, half a day, I can come up with a paint scheme, run it down to the painters, have some tubes painted up and know exactly what that's going to look like on a bike, how certain gradients are going to be affected, what the metallic flake is going to be like in something. And I think that's totally invaluable and just like an amazing platform to work with.
Yeah, I mean, that's like if you're a designer designing on bikes, that's the dream. Yeah. That's like... hands down, that's probably like the best situation you can have.
We're very lucky.
But that's, that's Trek's, an incredibly established brand. Like, I think he's always had a great reputation in the industry, maybe tarnished a lot during a certain cyclist
Texans time.
Yeah, certain guys' time. Maybe that tarnished it quite a bit.
But I think in terms of my outside point of view before I even started at Trek was like the way that they handled that and turned it around. I mean, having such a massive focus on, building cyclocross in the US, which is now like next to the Netherlands and Belgium, I think like the biggest place for cross. We have the Trek Cup in our backyard. which is ridiculous and amazing. And then like a huge focus on women's racing, and then, you know, not to mention like with the Trek Factory Racing team, but with also like Trek Segafredo, how huge that team is. I think we're like now the only bike brand in the world that has their own team.
I can't think of any others.
Yeah, I don't think, because we own the team and we operate it out of Waterloo pretty much. It's amazing to walk down to your cafeteria and see, you know, Richie Port or someone like that having their breakfast, and you're like, oh, cool, it's Richie Port. What's he doing here?
Cool. It's very casual, like sitting there just having a bowl of porridge or something.
When I first got here, it was absolutely mental, because I arrived the weekend of Trek CX Cup, and I'm a massive crosshead, a massive fan, and I race cross as well. And walking into the cafeteria, I literally saw like Yolanda Neff and Sven Nace having a conversation. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm into now. And then, like, you know, I walked around the corner and like bumped into a bunch of pros, like literally walked into them and was like, oh, sorry. And they're like, oh, sorry. Like, it's pretty insane. Like, you've got to pinch yourself, and I'm trying really hard to make sure that stuff never loses its effect. Like, I think once you let that stuff become blasé, you're not in it for the right reasons anymore. You've got to enjoy that stuff.
So I had a moment like that this weekend where I was I had a really manic like last 5 days with my actual 9-to-5 job, and I was working over the weekend for it, and because we were like streaming some stuff. Anyway, I had to do a test call with Stibar.
Nice.
And I was just like, shit, I've got to do a test call with one of my favorite bike riders.
Yeah.
Not just for what he did in the cross side of it, but what he did on the road.
Yeah. And like, also for just being a seriously cool person.
And a really nice guy. Oh,
yeah, he seems like
And I'd have like a probably 15, 20 minute conversation with him. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit, sorry, mate, this is a test call. Yeah. Like, I told him straight away, and I was like, fuck, this is a test call. I should probably let you go and have your actual interview now. Yeah. And he was like, we're chatting away, and he's sitting there having dinner with his kids.
Yeah, very cool.
I was just like, everything about this right now is fucking cool to me. And like,
I love
him. It's like, you're right, you can't let things like that, the moment that becomes normal, you need to mix up your job
for sure,
or your life, absolutely, or something.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like, I probably equally to you, I feel very lucky and privileged to be in the position that I am in. But I equally, there's been a lot of hard work that's gone on in the background. And the other bit that I found interesting is you said that you used to play rugby. I used to play rugby as well, so I find that really interesting.
I knew there was a reason I liked you.
What position did you play?
I was an open side flanker.
I was a tight head prop.
Oh, amazing. At least you're a forward. Yeah. We're
prop. That's the proper, right? That's the proper guys at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. That's where the whole game happens.
I didn't manage to fuck my ears up as well, so I'm quite proud of that.
Yeah, I've only got I've got a partially cauliflowered ear, but I got it drained straight after a game where it got smashed, and it kind of went away, but no, still, I'm still okay. I mean, everything else is broken on my body from rugby, but yeah.
Yeah, that's why I managed to dislocate both of my knees the wrong way.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
I didn't know that there was a wrong way, but apparently there's a wrong way. and I did them in different matches, but then I stood up on one of them and just collapsed.
Yeah.
And that basically broke my leg out of that.
Fantastic. That's just what you want.
Yeah. I mean, you know, pop your knee out, break your leg. Yeah. Get the gas in, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I stopped playing when I would have been 21, mm-hmm. I think. And I kept getting injured.
Yeah.
I was, stop. You know, I'm not that tall. I was a small prop. I'm 5'11", so 183, I think, 182, 183.
Mm-hmm.
So I was small. I was a small prop. But I was a lot bigger. I was like 120 kilos. I was big, but I was short compared to everyone else on the team. And I used to get battered.
Low center of
gravity. Absolutely battered. Yeah, I just used to, well, like, half, most of the guys on the team were like 6'4"
yeah,
quite often, like 2 meter guys, like just fucking like taking you out.
I can completely relate, mate. I basically had to retire when I was 23. I'd had so many injuries. I think I'd had, at that time, I'd had about 7 surgeries. And then it got to the point where I'd just come back from like a really bad ankle injury. I had to get dissolved my anterior ligament in my ankle. So like the whole
dissolved.
Yeah. So I'd torn it so many times that it just wouldn't refuse or wouldn't reconnect. So it was that bad. And I was sort of staring down the barrel of like a, you know, wearing an ankle brace for every game of rugby I played again for the rest of my life. And it was one of the games that I returned on. I broke my back. I got folded backwards in a ruck and broke my back. And I remember all our team doctors just finding out about it and just having a conversation with me and being like, mate, it's probably time to pack it in. You've had enough. You weren't made for this. Yeah.
It's like my cousin played at a pretty high level and similar things, just continual injuries. Both of us just got continual injuries all the time. But he played at like junior national kind of level. Yeah. But he was very good. And same thing, just kept breaking things. And we were both, and I'd kind of given up by that point. And then he just got to this point and he's like, it fucking sucks, doesn't it? And I was like, well, yeah, it's a brutal sport. Like, it's hard.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Like, so I moved from Melbourne to go to Queensland to play rugby just because I wanted to see, like, what the breadth of talent was there. And just, yeah, like, an absolutely ridiculous amount of talented players that, like, you know, could be somebody. But it's really about, like, whether or not your body can survive and whether you can whether you can make it to like have that, you know, perfect run to have a career in the sport.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what people like, I think a lot of people don't really, you need luck on your side. It's the same with any kind of sport though. You need a bit of luck on your side. Like, you don't have it. Like you put it in simple terms. You think of a cyclocross race or a bike or a crit.
Mm-hmm.
So much luck in those kind of races. Like,
yeah,
chains clogging up, flats, getting knocked off. Like, I flatly don't do crits anymore because I had a string of crits where I just kept getting in crashes, like not even trying to be in crashes, just ending up in pileups by not my own mistake, by someone else's mistake. And I just got to a point where I was like, I think it was like, the time it was when I did a crit at Lee Valley, which is one of the local circuits here, and I'd ridden off the front of the peloton and I felt fine. Like, I felt really good. Ridden off the front. And then I sat up because I was like, I never fancy myself in a sprint. I can't sprint. But I was like, fuck it. I fancy myself in a sprint today. I was obviously being like Billy Big Bollocks or something like that. And basically one guy went off the circuit and there's like a brick line to the end of the circuit and then it's grass. Onto the grass, rode in front of the peloton. I was sitting like in second row of the peloton, swung back on. Like, he obviously didn't have control of his bike or anything. And just literally, it was just a pile up of like 20 riders, 30 riders. And I was at the bottom of that pile up and I didn't get up for a long time because I had a lot of bikes and stuff on top of me. And I shredded the skin suit and I'd kept having crashes before this. And that was the race where I turned and I had to get looked over because I had like loads of marks all down my neck and everything. And they were concerned that I was like face down. They were concerned that I'd done something to my neck.
Ooh.
I hadn't. It was all right. But it was just like red marks and stuff. Anyway, I got up. My skin suit had completely shredded. I had my butt cheek hanging out. My right butt cheek hanging out. Like, just like, completely out.
Making fashion statements. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, punk era, maybe it tied into that. I don't know, fuck those. But I was like, had it all, everything out on show, completely ripped skin suit, cut up and everything like that. And I remember getting up, my mate Jimmy was like, come around, he lived around the corner, and he was like, come over and I'll give you some kit so you can wear.
Yeah.
Conveniently, he has his own clothing brand, so that helped. So... And then I remember saying to him, I was like, I'm not doing another fucking crit race again. And I haven't done one since.
Yeah, wow.
Because, like, a lot of it does come down to luck in those situations. Yeah. It's rugby. any kind of sport. Like, and it's not just like,
you know, crits as well. Positioning is such a big thing, right? And you want to be where all the fastest stuff is happening because it's actually the safest.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you just get one knobhead who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Unfortunately, the guy got,
right, with crit racing is, you just, so much of the time you don't know who you're racing against. I was actually so excited about racing crits this year here in America, just, you know, how big they are and how massive the scene is. But I was so excited of like this huge unknown of going from, you know, A-grade crit racing in Australia, which is like some ridiculously strong and talented riders, but like everybody kind of knows each other and everybody's, you know, there at the end of the day to go home. Whereas in the US, there's like so much money on the line for a lot of these races that it's just like, it's pretty full on. It looks like a closer to a punch on sometimes than an actual
race.
And I was pretty keen to throw myself into that this year, but I think that's going to happen.
Yeah. It's like the crit scene in the US is probably the best scene in the world.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah. I mean, from the kind of stuff I've seen, like, it looks amazing.
Well, that's what the Americans are amazing at doing, isn't it? They take something that isn't quite achieving what it needs to be achieving, and just absolutely, you know, pumping it full of excitement and drama and spectacle and often money, and then it becomes what it should be.
Yeah, it's part of the fun of the whole American. It's the American dream, isn't it?
Yeah,
American dream. Right. Put loads of money behind it.
Yeah.
Oh God! Nearly knocked over a rowing machine. That's not good. So, fuck. We've covered quite a lot. We've covered about your work. We've talked about rugby, cycling, crits, your background, your family being architects. Like, what for me is really interesting is there's a lot of common ground here.
It seems like it,
which is really, really nice.
I'm really frustrated this year. I was like, the tricky thing with moving around so much is like, I've got, you know, friends in a lot of places all over the world, some really close friends, and you have these things where you're like, oh yeah, I'd love to get over to the UK to see, you know, I've got two best mates who are they're both best mates living in the UK, and then all these connections like Dov and then you as well, and I'm like, when am I actually going to get over and see these people? But it's great knowing people all over the world, but you know, it's what's really frustrating.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, I feel very lucky to have good friends in lots of different cities, because like I always think if you've got friends in different cities, they're the people you want to take you around.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they know that you're not going to go to the touristy bits. You're going to go to the good bits. Like, so I've got a really good friend. I love Girona. I would move to Girona in a heartbeat. I love it. I can't speak a word of Spanish, and I love that.
It's a cycling playground, right?
Yeah, the riding's incredible. I love Spain as a country anyway. I used to live, my old housemate was Spanish, and so I used to go to Barcelona like two or three times a year with
him.
So I have, like, I really do love Spain, and I go there a lot anyway for cycling holidays, but I went to Girona with, I've got a really good friend out there called Chabby, he doesn't live in Girona, but he lives very close. Well, no, actually, he does live in Girona now. He's not from Girona, but he used to live in the UK for a while, and I met him in the UK originally, and then he moved back to Girona, and he is the person, when I went over there like, the first couple of times, who like, was like, go to this restaurant, go to this cafe, because there's so many there. Like, Girona's got fucking hundreds of them. And everyone goes to like the ones that you see on Instagram. I'm not going to name drop, but everyone knows who it is. He's like, oh, no, don't go there. Go to this one around the corner. It's half the price and the food's better.
Oh, for sure. But insider knowledge is invaluable, right? And it gives you a better understanding of the real culture. I mean, like when I was living in Amsterdam, I lived there and all my mates were Dutch. They all spoke Dutch, so I had to learn it. And then I think I'm positive I never visited the red light district or Anne Frank's house or like any of the, you know, the spots that all the tourists go to, but I got this inside knowledge of what it is like to be, you know, like a 20 something Dutch person living in the Netherlands. And I think that's invaluable.
I've got a good friend that lives in Amsterdam as well. who I designed. I did like a pattern for his cargo bike. I put it on the Instagram, which is for his son, basically. It's a it's called a an Urban Arrow. Yeah. Is the bike?
Yeah, I know them.
And basically, his son's it was to take his son to school, and so and his son wanted something that looked like a loads of arrows on the bike, and they wanted to try and make it look
different. Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
And I've only been to Amsterdam twice. It's a place I really want to go to get an understanding of it. And the first time I went was basically for a meeting with work. And the second time I went was I spent a lot of time with him. And we had like, he's in the cycling industry. So we did a few like work chat things anyway. But he took me on a bike ride and took me to like a local cafe. And I was just like, fuck, it's great here. Like, it's really, he's like, oh, he's like, I'll take you to the one hill in Amsterdam. And we got to the top of it, and I was like, is that the hill?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, that's the hill. It's tough, isn't it? And I was like,
was it like a cobbled, was it like a cobbled climb?
Yeah.
In like a really green, leafy suburban area.
Yeah.
It's called a Het Kopje, the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's the climb in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds pretty similar to Madison, Wisconsin, actually.
Just flat,
flat as a tack, with lots of like sort of rollers and just a lot of wind.
Yeah, we went and then rode like towards the coast, and it was fucking windy.
Yeah, it's full on. It's full on Madone territory here.
Yeah. I was gonna say it must be.
That's perfect.
So I'm gonna. I'm conscious of time, as I always am. We've been talking a while. I'm gonna do my usual and chuck. Five, you can chuck five different tips at me.
I actually love this because it's probably the only time in my life where actually living by like some really ridiculous set principles is I can actually tell people about it.
This is my favorite bit. I try to end every podcast on this. I've only not done it once. That's because I forgot because the podcast got very deep. But I like to finish on it because I think it's really interesting for people listening, and it's fucking interesting for me. Dov's tips about the herbs. That's genius.
Yeah, how good is like, that? The dry fry.
I'm never expecting it from him.
That's good. All right, well, I'll try not to get too deep with some of them.
Deep is good. I like deep.
So the first one is, this was something that I was actually told by one of my rugby coaches when I was really young, and it's go everywhere with flowers. And so essentially what that means is everywhere you go, take something that's like bright and beautiful, whether it's like, you know, looking nice or smelling good or just taking like a really positive attitude everywhere. I think that's one that I've tried to live by. And I think it was just, he was like this big ex-professional Fijian front row prop. And for him to say go everywhere with flowers for me was like really humbling and beautiful.
That's nice. That's a really nice one.
I think the other big one would be the person your dog thinks you are. I just absolutely love that comment. Like just the idea of like being this amazing shining orb of a human being, I think is something really great to like strive towards.
That's amazing. As someone who, so my grandparents used to run an animal charity when they were around. And so it's whenever you talk about animals, I'm like,
I'm a massive dog person. Massive.
Yeah. I definitely miss having dogs and cats or any animal, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've left mine home, back home in Australia, which is pretty tricky too. But she's a 15-year-old staffy who's blind and deaf. So she wasn't going to come over to America with me.
She's just my folks,
but she's pretty happy there.
Well, she's with good people. That's the most important
thing. Oh, for sure.
I might have a cat called Kevin. He got hit by a car, unfortunately.
Oh, so he
had to go to my mum, but he was called Kevin. So it's fucking hilarious.
That's a fantastic name. I love people who name their animals human names.
Yeah.
I had a mate who had a bulldog just called Phil. And I love that. I thought it was the best name ever. Where's Phil?
Phil.
Oi, Phil. Get your nose out of it.
Yeah, that was a great name.
So this one is definitely me drying my laundry here. But you don't need to squeeze avocados to tell if they're ripe. I think this one is something that the world needs to know. You can tell an avocado is ripe by its color and its shape. You don't need to squeeze it. Because when you squeeze an avocado, it gets bruised. And then the next person who buys it has to eat a bruised avocado.
No one wants that.
Nobody wants that. It's the worst.
So what color and shape should a ripe avocado look like?
I think it just needs to be, and you know, another really good way to tell is if you know the, I don't know what it'd be called. It's like the little pip at the top, like where the stem used to be. You can touch that. And if that's soft, if that goes in, it means the whole avocado is ripe as well.
That's a good one. Yeah.
So you don't have to destroy the whole thing. You just touch the little button. I mean, nature designed it for us as a button.
Yeah, it's a little NOS button, isn't it?
Yeah. Another one would be, I've forgotten them all now. If you want to heal yourself, focus your efforts on healing others. Because I feel like through selfless caring of people, you'll inadvertently make yourself feel better and happier. And I think the world will be a better place.
I like that. That's relates a lot to something my dad always said to me, which was treat everyone else how you'd want to be treated yourself.
For sure. And I mean, it's age old, isn't it? I mean, we all forget that we all have our own problems, but pretty much everybody has some sort of, you know, trauma or, you know, some sort of darkness that they're dealing with. And I think the ability to be able to try and, you know, selflessly give is a great healing tool.
Yeah, I think, like, personally, I do a lot of charity work, and almost selfishly, it makes me feel amazing.
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, in the long run, you're building a bunch of connections of people who trust you and you trust, so you're building your own circle of trust, and it makes you feel better. So, yeah, it is selfish. How dare you do all this charity work?
Bastard.
I like that. I don't know if I have a fifth one. Maybe tell your mum you love her.
Nice. Keep it simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you know what? Tell your mum I love her.
My mum's crazy, man. Everyone loves my mum, but she is nuts. She used to be a hairdresser. She used to be, like, before that, she was, like, proper punk. This came up recently.
She's got character.
She's nuts. So this came up in conversation recently because, obviously, in the UK, like, everyone's talking about, like, lockdown haircuts and stuff, probably in the same amount in the States.
Yeah.
And my hair grows ridiculously quickly, so I look like Jesus right now. Yeah. I got quite long shaggy hair and a beard. And so anyway, my mum, someone was talking about, like, haircuts and stuff, one of my friends was, like, dyeing her hair, and it looked like it was like a blue hair dye, but it's just like a tint. And she was like, I was like, oh, how blue did it come out? She's like, oh, it's not really blue, it's just a tint. I was like, oh, I used to have blue hair once. She's like, what? I'm like, my mum was a fucking punk and a hairdresser. She used to go nuts. I was like, do you want blue hair today? And I'm like, yeah, why not?
Brilliant. You should get your hair done Yves Klein blue.
Mate, that colour.
Yeah, I heard you're a big fan.
It's my favourite colour. It's one of my favourite colours. It's just such a good... It's just a really pleasing tone. Mm. Really pleasing tone. Do you know what?
As well, it's having, like, a massive resurgence in the fashion industry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And do you know what? Well, like, Yves Saint Laurent used it tons. Yeah. Like, I never quite realized how much Yves Saint Laurent used it until I went to the Yves Saint Laurent museum in Morocco.
And you're like, oh, this is their brand.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, this is amazing. And there's literally a house painted in that blue.
Unreal.
Like a three-story house, big house.
Yeah, I think I know the one. It's quite famous, isn't it?
Yeah. 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 It's, and inside it is like a museum. I can't remember what it's called. Oh.
There's a delivery thing. I'll be back. Hello? Now that is one of two things. Very interesting.
There's a lot of beeping going on. This is a noisy house. A noisy apartment.
So that's my door entrance thing. That's one of two things. It's otherwise my partner's come back because she's gone to go and pick up blueberry muffins, which is amazing. Or it's my new electric toothbrush I've ordered.
Oh, wow.
I know. Big spender.
Just those quarantine purchases, right?
Mate,
I've been guilty. I've been guilty of a lot.
I am so guilty for it.
I have become recently super addicted to indoor plants. And I've been buying a lot of them.
I feel like a story of like a jungle. You in like a jungle cap or something.
Yeah, that's my room. It's a full-on jungle at the moment. I've just recently got into repropagating and replanting, so I'm officially into it.
Oh my god, that's beautiful. I mean, you know, the graphic design, the sporting background, gardener,
yeah, plants.
I'll be back in 1 second. Yeah. I'm just gonna open the door.
I was almost tempted to, while you're gone, do your do an official sign off for you.
Oh, you, mate, you could do the sign off.
I love that. I loved you've spoken about it a couple of times, but I love the one that your mate Stefan did.
Oh, it's so slick, wasn't it?
Oh, so I mean, if I do one, it'll absolutely ruin it, but I'll give it a go.
Yeah, go on, you can do it.
Thank you for listening to the Zero Lemon podcast. I've been your host, Greg Thorne. This was my guest, Chris Hall. You can find him at Chris Hall Rides on Instagram. You can also find this podcast at all good places where you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your mum. I've been Greg. You can find me at Pantone_GT on Instagram or Gregory Thorne. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
Fucking hell, that's so good.
Oh, I've got to admit, I had to stop myself from giggling halfway through.
That was brilliant.
You know what? Maybe I should start a podcast.
Do it as well. Why not? Let's everyone do it. Apparently, it's a quarantine thing. Yeah. Podcast.
We're all doing it.
Yeah, fuck it. Just see how long we can make them last. Amazing. Okay. I'm going to wrap it there because that was way too slick.
Beautiful, mate. Too good. Great chatting to you.
Thank you so much for your time. Yeah. Let's talk when, whenever we want. Let's just do something soon.
For sure, man.
Thank you so much for your time.
Cheers, buddy.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.